This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The Elite by Kira Cass, performed by Amy Rubinate. Chapter 1. The Angelus air was quiet, and for a while I lay still, listening to the sound of Maxon's breathing. It was getting harder and harder to catch him in a truly calm and happy moment, and I soaked up the time, grateful that he seemed to be at his best when he and I were alone. Ever since the selection had been narrowed down to 6 girls, he'd been more anxious than he was when the 35 of us arrived in the first place. I guessed he'd thought he'd have more time to make his choices. And though it made me feel guilty to admit it, I knew I was the reason why he wished he did. Prince Maxon, heir to the Ilia throne, liked me. He'd told me a week ago that if I could simply say that I cared for him the way he did for me, without anything holding me back, this whole competition would be over. And sometimes I played with the idea, wondering how it would feel to be Maxon's alone. But the thing was, Maxon wasn't really mine to begin with. There were 5 other girls here, girls he took on dates and whispered things to, and I didn't know what to make of that. And then there was the fact that if I accepted Maxon, it meant I had to accept a crown, a thought I tended to ignore, if only because I wasn't sure what it would mean for me. And of course, there was Aspen. He wasn't technically my boyfriend anymore. He'd broken up with me before my name was even drawn for the selection. But when he showed up at the palace as one of the guards, all the feelings I'd been trying to let go of flooded my heart. Aspen was my first love. When I looked at him, I was his. Maxon didn't know that Aspen was in the palace, but he did know that there was someone at home I was trying to get over, and he was graciously giving me time to move on, while attempting to find someone else he'd be happy with, in the event I couldn't ever love him. As he moved his head, inhaling just above my hairline, I considered it. What would it be like to simply love Maxon?
"Do you know when the last time was that I really looked at the stars?"
he asked. I settled closer to him on our blanket, trying to keep warm in the cool Angelus night. "No idea."
"A tutor had me studying astronomy a few years ago. If you look closely, you can tell that the stars are actually different colors."
"Wait, the last time you looked at the stars was to study them? What about for fun?" He chuckled.
"Fun? I'll have to pencil in some between the budget consultations, the infrastructure committee meetings, oh, and war strategizing, which, by the way, I am terrible at."
"What else are you terrible at?" I asked, running my hand across his starched shirt. Encouraged by the touch, Maxon drew circles on my shoulder with the hand he had wrapped behind my back.
"Why would you want to know that?"
he asked in mock irritation. "Because I still know so little about you, and you seem perfect all the time. It's nice to have proof you're not." He propped himself up on an elbow, focusing on my face.
"You know I'm not."
"Pretty close," I countered. Little flickers of touch ran between us. Knees, arms, fingers. He shook his head, a small smile on his face.
"Okay, then. I can't plan wars, I'm rotten at it, and I'm guessing I'd be a terrible cook. I've never tried, so..."
"Never?"
"You might have noticed the teams of people keeping you up to your neck in pastries. They happen to feed me as well."
I giggled. I helped cook practically every meal at home. "More," I demanded. "What else are you bad at?" He held me close, his brown eyes bright with a secret.
"Recently, I've discovered this one thing."
"Tell."
"It turns out, I'm absolutely terrible at staying away from you. It's a very serious problem."
I smiled. "Have you really tried?" He pretended to think about it.
"Well, no. and don't expect me to start.
We laughed quietly, holding on to each other. In these moments, it was so easy to picture this being the rest of my life. The rustle of leaves and grass announced that someone was coming. Even though our date was completely acceptable, I felt a little embarrassed and sat up quickly. Maxon followed suit as a guard made his way around the hedge to us.
"Your Majesty," he said with a bow. "Sorry to intrude, sir, but it's really unwise to stay out this late for so long. The rebels could..."
"Understood," Maxon said with a sigh. "We'll be right in."
The guard left us alone, and Maxon turned back to me.
"Another fault of mine. I'm losing patience with the rebels. I'm tired of dealing with them."
He stood and offered me his hand. I took it, watching the sad frustration in his eyes. We'd been attacked twice by the rebels since the start of this election, once by the simply disruptive northerners, and once by the deadly southerners. And even with my brief experience, I could understand his exhaustion. Maxon was picking up the blanket and shaking it out, clearly not happy that our night had been cut short. "Hey," I said, urging him to face me. "I had fun." He nodded. "No, really," I said, walking over to him. He moved the blanket to one hand to wrap his free arm around me. "We should do it again sometime. You can tell me which stars are which colors, because I seriously can't tell." Maxon gave me a sad smile.
"I wish things were easier sometimes. Normal."
I moved so I could wrap my arms around him, and as I did so, Maxon dropped the blanket to return the gesture. "I hate to break it to you, Your Majesty, but even without the guards, you're far from normal." His expression lightened a bit, but was still serious.
"You'd like me more if I was."
"I know you find it hard to believe, but I really do like you the way you are. I just need more."
"Time. I know. And I'm prepared to give you that. I only wish I knew that you'd actually want to be with me when that time was over."
I looked away. That wasn't something I could promise. I weighed Maxon and Aspen in my heart over and over, and neither of them ever had a true edge. Except maybe when I was alone with one of them, because at that moment, I was tempted to promise Maxon that I would be there for him in the end. But I couldn't. "Maxon," I whispered, seeing how dejected he looked at my lack of an answer. "I can't tell you that, but what I can tell you is that I want to be here. I want to know if there's a possibility for... I stammered, not sure how to put it.
"Us?"
Maxon guessed. I smiled, happy at how easily he understood me. "Yes. I want to know if there's a possibility for us to be an us." He moved a lock of hair behind my shoulder.
"I think the odds are very high," he said matter-of-factly.
"I think so, too. Just time, okay?" He nodded, looking happier. This was how I wanted to end our night, with hope. Well, and maybe one more thing. I bit my lip and leaned into Maxon, asking with my eyes. Without a second of hesitation, he bent to kiss me. It was warm and gentle, and it left me feeling adored and somehow aching for more. I could have stayed there for hours just to see if I could get enough of that feeling, but too soon Maxon backed away.
"Let's go," he said in a playful tone, pulling me toward the palace. "Better get inside before the guards come for us on horseback with spears drawn."
As Maxon left me at the stairs, the tiredness hit me like a wall. I was practically dragging myself up to the second floor and around the corner to my room, when suddenly I was quite awake again.
"Oh,"
Aspen said, surprised to see me too.
"I think it makes me the worst guard ever that I assumed you were in your room the whole time."
I giggled. The elite were supposed to sleep with at least one of their maids on watch in the night. I really didn't like that, so Maxon insisted on stationing a guard by my room in case there was an emergency. The thing was, most of the time that guard was Aspen. It was a strange mix of exhilaration and terror, knowing that nearly every night he was right outside my door. The lightness of the moment faded quickly as Aspen grasped what it meant that I hadn't been safely tucked in my bed. He cleared his throat uncomfortably.
Did you have a good time?
Aspen, I whispered, looking to make sure no one was around. Don't be upset. I'm part of the selection and this is just how it is.
How am I supposed to stand a chance, Mayor? How can I compete when you only ever talk to one of us?
He made a good point, but what could I do? Please don't be mad at me, Aspen. I'm trying to figure all this out.
No, Mayor,
he said, gentleness returning to his voice.
I'm not mad at you. I miss you.
He didn't dare say the words aloud, but he mouthed them. I love you. I melted. I know, I said, placing a hand on his chest, letting myself forget for a moment all that we were risking. But that doesn't change where we are, or that I'm an elite now. I need time, Aspen. He reached up to hold my hand in his and nodded.
I can give you that. Just try to find some time for me, too.
I didn't want to bring up how complicated that would be, so I gave him a tiny smile before gently pulling my hand away. I need to go. He watched me as I walked into my room and shut the door behind me. Time. I was asking for a lot of it these days. I hoped that if I had enough, everything would somehow fall into place. Chapter 2. No, no, Queen Amberlee answered with a laugh. I only had 3 bridesmaids, though Clarkson's mother suggested I have more. I just wanted my sisters and my best friend, who, coincidentally, I'd met during my selection. I peeked over at Marley and was happy to find she was looking at me, too. Before I arrived at the palace, I had assumed that with this being such a high-stakes competition, there'd be no way any of the girls would be friendly. Marley had embraced me the first time we met, and we'd been there for each other from that moment on. With a single, almost exception, we'd never even had an argument. A few weeks ago, Marley had mentioned that she didn't think she wanted to be with Maxon. When I'd pushed her to explain, she clammed up. She wasn't mad at me, I knew that, but those days of silence before we'd let it go were lonely. I want 7 bridesmaids, Chris said. I mean, if Maxon chooses me and I get to have a big wedding. Well, I won't have bridesmaids, Celeste said, countering Chris. They're just distracting, and since it would be televised, I want all eyes on me. I fumed. It was rare that we all got to sit and talk with Queen Amberlee, and here Celeste was being a brat and ruining it. I'd want to incorporate some of my culture's traditions into my wedding, Elise added quietly. Girls back in New Asia use a lot of red in their ceremonies, and the groom has to bring gifts to the bride's friends to reward them for letting her marry him. Chris piped up. Remind me to be in your wedding party. I love presents. Me too, Marley exclaimed. Lady America, you've been awfully quiet, Queen Amberlee said. What do you want at your wedding? I blushed because I was completely unprepared to comment. There was only one wedding I'd ever imagined, and it was going to take place at the province of Carolina's services office after an exhausting amount of paperwork. Well, the one thing I've thought about is having my dad give me away. You know, when he takes your hand and puts it in the hand of the person you marry? That's the only part I've ever really wanted. Embarrassingly enough, it was true. But everyone does that, Celeste complained. That's not even original. I should have been mad that she called me out, but I merely shrugged. I want to know that my dad completely approves of my choice on the day it really matters. That's nice, Natalie said, sipping her tea and looking out the window. Queen Amberlee laughed lightly. I certainly hope he approves, no matter who it is. She added the last words quickly, catching herself in the middle of implying that Maxon would be my choice. I wondered if she thought that, if Maxon had told her about us. Shortly after, the wedding talk died down, and the queen left to go to work in her room. Celeste parked herself in front of the large television embedded in the wall, and the others started a card game. That was fun, Marley said as we settled in at a table together. I'm not sure I've ever heard the queen talk so much. She's getting excited, I think. I hadn't mentioned to anyone what Maxon's aunt had told me about how Queen Amberley tried many times for another child and failed. Adele had predicted that her sister would warm up to us once the group was smaller, and she was right. Okay, you have to tell me. Do you honestly not have any other plans for your wedding, or did you just not want to share? I really don't, I promised. I have a hard time picturing a big wedding, you know? I'm a five. Marley shook her head. You were a five. You're a three now. Right, I said, remembering my new label. I was born into a family of fives, artists and musicians who were generally poorly paid. And though I hated the caste system in general, I liked what I did for a living. It was strange to think of myself as a three, to consider embracing teaching or writing as a profession. Stop stressing, Marley said, reading my face. You don't have anything to worry about yet. I was about to protest, but was interrupted by a cry from Celeste. Come on, she yelled, slamming the remote against the couch before pointing it at the television again. Ugh! Is it just me, or is she getting worse? I whispered to Marley. We watched as Celeste hit the remote over and over before giving up and going to change the channel manually. I guessed if I had grown up as a two, that would be something worth getting worked up over. It's the stress, I think, Marley commented. Have you noticed that Natalie's getting, I don't know, more aloof? I nodded, and we both looked over to the trio of girls playing their card game. Chris was smiling as she shuffled, but Natalie was examining the ends of her hair, occasionally pulling out a strand she didn't seem to like. Her expression was distracted. I think we're all starting to feel it, I confessed. It's harder to sit back and enjoy the palace now that the group is so small. Celeste grunted, and we peeked over at her but quickly avoided our eyes when she caught us looking. Excuse me for a moment, Marley said, shifting in her seat. I think I'm going to go to the bathroom. I was just thinking the same thing. Do you want to go together? I offered. Smiling, she shook her head. You go ahead. I'll finish my tea first. Okay, I'll be back. I left the women's room, taking my time walking down the gorgeous hallway. I wasn't sure I would ever get over how spectacular it was here. I was so distracted that I ran smack into a guard as I turned the corner. Oh, I said.
Pardon me, miss. Hope I didn't startle you.
He held me by my elbows, helping me regain my footing. No, I said, giggling. It's fine. I should have been watching where I was going. Thanks for catching me, officer.
Woodwork,
he answered, giving me a quick bow. I'm America.
I know.
I smiled and rolled my eyes. Of course he knew. Well, I hope the next time I run into you, it won't be quite so literal, I joked. He chuckled.
Agreed. Have a nice day, miss.
You too. I told Marley about my embarrassing run-in with Officer Woodwork when I got back and warned her to watch her step. She laughed at me and shook her head. We spent the rest of the afternoon sitting by the windows, chatting about home and the other girls as we drank in the sunshine. It was sad to think about the future just then. Eventually, the selection would be over, and while I knew Marley and I would still be close, I would miss talking to her every day. She was the first real friend I'd ever made, and I wished I could keep her beside me all the time. As I tried to stay in the moment, Marley gazed dreamily out the window. I wondered what she was thinking about, but everything was so peaceful, I didn't ask. Chapter 3. The wide doors of my balcony were open, as well as the one to the hallway, and my room was filled with the warm, sweet air blowing in from the gardens. I had hoped the soft breezes would be a consolation for the fact that I had so much work to do. Instead, they distracted me, making me ache to be anywhere but stuck at my desk. I sighed and reclined in my seat, letting my head drape over the back of my chair. "Anne," I called.
"Yes, miss?"
my head maid answered from the corner where she was sewing. Without looking, I knew that Mary and Lucy, my other two maids, had perked up, waiting to see if they could serve me as well.
"I command you to figure out what this report means," I said, pointing a lazy arm at the detailed account on military statistics that sat in front of me. It was a task that all the elite would be tested on, but I couldn't bring myself to focus on it.
My three maids laughed, probably from both the ridiculousness of my demand and the fact that I'd issued one at all. I wouldn't have called leadership one of my strong suits.
"I'm sorry, my lady, but I think that might be overstepping my boundaries," Anne answered. Even though my request was a joke and her answer was too, I could hear the genuine apology in her voice for not being able to help me.
"Fine," I moaned, heaving myself into an upright position. "I'll simply have to do it myself. The whole lot of you are worthless. I'm getting new maids tomorrow. This time I mean it." They all chuckled again, and I focused on the numbers one more time. I was getting the impression that this was a bad report, but I couldn't be sure. I reread paragraphs and charts, furrowing my brow and biting the back of my pen as I tried to concentrate. I heard Lucy laugh quietly, and I looked up to see what she was so amused by, following her eyes to the door. There, leaning against the frame, was Maxon.
"You gave me away," he complained to Lucy, who continued to snicker.
I pushed back my chair in a rush and ran into his arms.
"You read my mind."
"Did I?"
"Please tell me we can go outside, just for a little while."
He smiled.
"I have 20 minutes before I have to be back."
I pulled him down the hall, the excited chatter of my maids fading behind us. There was no denying the gardens had become our place. Almost every chance we got to be alone, we came out here. It was such a stark contrast to how I used to spend my time with Aspen, holed up in the tiny treehouse in my backyard, the only place we could be together safely. Suddenly, I wondered if Aspen was around somewhere, indistinguishable from the numerous guards in the palace, watching as Maxon held my hand.
"What are these?"
Maxon asked, brushing across the tips of my fingers as we walked. "Calluses. They're from pressing down on violin strings 4 hours a day."
"I've never noticed them before."
"Do they bother you?" I was the lowest caste of the 6 girls left, and I doubted any of them had hands like mine. Maxon stopped moving and lifted my fingers to his lips, kissing the tiny, worn tips.
"On the contrary, I find them rather beautiful."
I felt myself blush.
"I've seen the world, admittedly mostly through bulletproof glass or from the tower of some ancient castle, but I've seen it, and I have access to the answers of 1,000 questions at my disposal. But this small hand here?"
He looked deeply into my eyes.
"This hand makes sounds incomparable to anything I've ever heard. Sometimes, I think I only dreamed that I heard you play the violin. It was so beautiful. These calluses are proof that it was real."
At times, the way he spoke to me was overwhelming, too romantic to believe. But though I cherished the words in my heart, I was never completely sure I could trust them. How did I know he wasn't saying such sweet things to the other girls? I had to change the subject.
"Do you really have the answers to 1,000 questions?
"Absolutely. Ask me anything. And if I don't know the answer, I know where we can find it."
"Anything?"
"Anything."
It was tough to come up with a question on the spot, much less one that would stump him, which was what I wanted. I took a moment to think of the things I'd been most curious about when I was growing up. How planes flew, what the United States used to be like, how the tiny music players that the upper castes had worked. And then it hit me.
"What's Halloween?" I asked.
"Halloween?"
Clearly he'd never heard of it. I wasn't surprised.
I'd only seen the word once myself in an old history book my parents had. Some parts of that book were tattered beyond recognition, with pages missing or mostly destroyed. Still, I was always fascinated by the mention of a holiday we knew nothing about. "Not so certain now, your royal smartness?" I teased. He made a face at me, though it was clear he was only playing at being annoyed. He checked his watch and sucked in a breath.
"Come with me. We have to hurry,"
he said, grabbing my hand and launching himself into a run. I stumbled a bit in my little heels, but I kept up pretty well as he led me back to the palace with a huge grin on his face. I loved when Maxon's carefree side came through. Too often he was so serious.
"Gentlemen,"
he said, as we raced past the guards by the door. I made it halfway down the hall before my shoes got the better of me. "Maxon, stop," I gasped. "I can't keep up."
"Come on, come on, you're going to love this,"
he complained, tugging my arm as I slowed. He finally eased back to my pace, but was obviously itching to move faster. We headed toward the north corridor, near the area where the reports were filmed, but ducked into a stairwell before we got that far. We went up and up, and I couldn't contain my curiosity. "Where are we going exactly?" He turned and faced me, immediately serious.
"You have to swear never to reveal this little chamber. Only a few members of the family and a handful of the guards even know it exists."
I was beyond intrigued. "Absolutely." We reached the top of the stairs and Maxon held open the door for me. He took my hand again and pulled me down the hallway, finally stopping in front of a wall that was mostly covered by a magnificent painting. Maxon looked behind us to make sure no one was there, then reached behind the frame on the far side. I heard a faint click, and the painting swung toward us. I gasped. Maxon grinned. Behind the painting was a door that didn't go all the way to the ground and had a small keypad on it, like the kind on a telephone. Maxon punched in a few numbers, and then a tiny beep sounded. He turned the handle as he looked back to me.
"Let me help you, it's quite a high step."
He gave me his hand and gestured for me to walk in first. I was shocked. The windowless room was covered with shelves full of what appeared to be ancient books. Two of the shelves contained books that had curious red slashes on the bindings, and I saw a massive atlas against one wall, open to a page that held the shape of some country I couldn't name. In the middle was a table with a handful of books on it, looking as if they'd been handled recently and left out for quick recovery. And finally, embedded in one wall, was a wide screen that looked like a TV. "What do the red slashes mean?" I asked in wonder.
"Those are banned books. As far as we know, they may be the only copies that still exist in all of Ilia."
I turned to him, asking with my eyes what I didn't dare say out loud.
"Yes, you can look at them,"
he said in a manner that implied I was putting him out, but with an expression that said he'd been hoping I'd ask. I lifted one of the books carefully, terrified that I might accidentally destroy a one-of-a-kind treasure. I flipped through the pages, but ended up setting it back down almost immediately. I was simply too awestruck. I turned around to find Maxon typing on something that looked like a flat typewriter attached to the TV screen. "What's that?" I asked.
"A computer. Have you never seen one?"
I shook my head, and Maxon didn't seem too surprised.
"Not many people have them anymore. This one is specifically for the information held in this room. If anything about your Halloween exists, this will tell us where it is."
I wasn't fully sure of what he was saying, but I didn't ask him to clarify. In a few seconds, his hunt produced a 3-bullet list on the screen.
"Oh, excellent,"
he exclaimed.
"Wait right there."
I stood by the table as Maxon found the 3 books that would reveal what Halloween was. I hoped it wasn't something stupid, and that I hadn't made him go through all this effort for nothing. The first book defined Halloween as a Celtic festival that marked the end of summer. Not wanting to slow us, I didn't bother mentioning I had no idea what a Celtic was. It said they believed that spirits passed in and out of the world on Halloween
and people would put on masks to ward off the evil ones. Later, it evolved into a secular holiday, mainly for children. They dressed up in costumes and went around their towns singing songs and were rewarded with candy, creating the saying trick-or-treat as they did a trick to get a treat. The second book defined it as something similar, only it mentioned pumpkins and Christianity.
"This will be the interesting one," Max exclaimed, flipping through a book that was much thinner than the others and handwritten.
"How so?" I asked, coming around to get a better look.
"This, Lady America, is one of the volumes of Gregory Ilya's personal diaries."
"What?" I exclaimed. "Can I touch it?"
"Let me find the page we're searching for first. Look, it even has a picture."
And there, like an apparition, an image from an unknown past showed Gregory Ilya, with a tight expression on his face, his suit crisp and his stance tall. It was bizarre how much of the king and Maxon I could see in the way he stood. Beside him, a woman was giving the camera a half-hearted smile. There was something to her face that hinted she was once very lovely, but the luster had gone out of her eyes. She seemed tired. Surrounding the couple were three figures. The first was a teenage girl, beautiful and vibrant, grinning widely and wearing a crown and a frilly gown. How funny! She was dressed as a princess. And then there were two boys, one slightly taller than the other and both dressed as characters I didn't recognize. They looked like they were on the verge of mischief. Below the image was an entry, amazingly enough, in Gregory Ilya's own hand. "The children celebrated Halloween this year with a party. I suppose it's one way to forget what's going on around them, but to me it feels frivolous. We're one of the few families remaining who have enough money to do something festive, but this child's play seems wasteful." "Do you think that's why we don't celebrate anymore? Because it's wasteful?" I asked.
"Could be. If the date's any indication, this was right after the American state of China started fighting back, just before the Fourth World War. At that point, most people had nothing. Picture an entire nation of sevens with a handful of twos."
"Wow." I tried to imagine the landscape of our country like that, blown apart by war, then fighting to pull itself back together. It was amazing. "How many of these diaries are there?" I asked. Maxon pointed to a shelf with a row of journals similar to the one we held.
"About a dozen or so."
I couldn't believe it. All this history, right in one room. "Thank you," I said. "This is something I would never even have dreamed of seeing. I can't believe all this exists." He was beaming.
"Would you like to read the rest of it?"
He motioned to the diary. "Yes, of course," I practically shouted before my duties came back to me. "But I can't stay. I have to finish studying that terrible report, and you have to get back to work."
"True. Well, how about this? You can take the book and keep it for a few days."
"Am I allowed to do that?" I asked in awe.
"No."
He smiled. I hesitated, afraid of what I held. What if I lost it? What if I ruined it? Surely he had to be thinking the same thing. But I would never have an opportunity like this again. I could be careful enough for the sake of this gift. "Okay. Just a night or two and then I'll give it straight back."
"Hide it well."
And I did. This was more than a book. It was Maxon's trust. I tucked it inside my piano stool under a pile of sheet music, a place my maids never cleaned. The only hands that would touch it would be mine. Chapter 4.
"I'm hopeless," Marley complained.
"No, no, you're doing great," I lied. I'd been giving Marley piano lessons nearly every day for more than a week, and it genuinely sounded like she was getting worse. For goodness sake, we were still working on scales. She hit another sour note, and I couldn't help but wince.
"Oh, look at your face," she exclaimed. "I'm terrible. I might as well be playing with my elbows."
"We should try that. Maybe your elbows are more accurate," she sighed.
"I give up.
Sorry, America, you've been so patient, but I hate hearing myself play. It sounds like the piano is sick.
More like it's dying, actually.
Marley collapsed into laughter, and I joined her. Little did I know that when she'd asked for piano lessons, my ears would be in for such painful but hilarious torture.
Maybe you'd be better at the violin? Violins make very beautiful music, I offered. I don't think so. With my luck, I'd destroy it.
Marley rose and went over to my little table, where the papers we were supposed to be reading were pushed to one side, and my sweet maids had left tea and cookies for us.
Oh, well, that's fine. The one here belongs to the palace anyway. You could throw it at Celeste's head if you wanted.
Don't tempt me, she said, pouring us both some tea.
I'm so going to miss you, America. I don't know what I'll do when we don't get to see each other every day.
Well, Maxon's very indecisive, so you don't have to worry about that just yet.
I don't know, she said, turning serious. He hasn't come right out and said it, but I know that I'm here because the public likes me. With the majority of the girls gone, it won't be long before their opinions change, and they have a new favorite, and then he'll let me go.
I was careful with my words, hoping she'd explain the reason for the distance she'd put between the two of them, but not wanting her to shut down on me again.
Are you okay with that? With not getting Maxon, I mean?
She gave a small shrug.
He's just not the one. I'm fine with being out of the competition, but I really don't want to leave, she clarified. Besides, I wouldn't want to end up with a man who's in love with someone else.
I sat bolt upright.
Who is he?
The look in Marley's eyes was triumphant, and the smile hiding behind her cup of tea said, Gotcha. She had. In a split second, I realized that the thought of Maxon being in love with someone else made me so jealous I couldn't stand it. And the moment after that, the understanding that she meant me was infinitely reassuring. I'd put up wall after wall, making jokes at Maxon's expense and talking up the merits of the other girls, but in a single sentence she found her way behind all that.
Why haven't you ended this, America? She asked sweetly. You know he loves you.
He never said that, I promised, and that was true.
Of course he hasn't, she said, as if this would be obvious. He's trying so hard to catch you, and every time he gets close, you push him away. Why do you do that?
Could I tell her? Could I confess that while my feelings for Maxon went deep, deeper than I knew, apparently, there was someone else I couldn't let go of? I'm just not sure, I guess. I trusted Marley, I really did. But it was safer for us both if she didn't know. She nodded. It looked like she could tell there was more to it than that, but she didn't press me. It was almost comforting, this mutual acceptance of our secrets.
Find a way to be sure. Soon. Just because he's not the one for me doesn't mean Maxon's not a great guy. I'd hate for you to lose him because you were afraid.
She was right again. I was afraid. Afraid that Maxon's feelings weren't as genuine as they seemed. Afraid of what being a princess might mean for me. Afraid of losing Aspen.
On a lighter note, she said, setting down her cup of tea. All that talk about weddings yesterday made me think of something.
Yes?
Would you want to, you know, be my maid of honor if I get married someday? Oh, Marley, of course I would. Would you be mine?
I reached to grab her hands and she took them happily.
But you have sisters, won't they mind?
They'll understand. Please?
Absolutely. I wouldn't miss your wedding for the world.
Her tone implied that my wedding would be the event of the century.
Promise me that even if I get married to a nobody eight in an alley somewhere, you'll be there?
She gave me a disbelieving look, positive that no such thing could ever happen.
Even if that's the case, I promise.
She didn't ask me to make a similar vow for her, which made me wonder, as I had in the past, if there was another four back home who she had her heart set on. I wouldn't press her, though. It was clear we both had secrets, but Marley was my best friend, and I would do anything for her. That night, I was hoping to spend some time with Maxon.
Marley had me questioning a lot of my actions and thoughts and feelings. After dinner, as we all stood to leave the dining room, I caught Maxon's eye and tugged my ear. It was our secret sign to ask for time together, and it was rare to pass up an invitation. But tonight, Maxon's expression was disappointed as he mouthed the word work to me. I gave him a mock pout and a tiny wave before leaving for the night. Perhaps it was for the best anyway. I really needed to think on some things where Maxon was concerned. When I rounded the corner to my room, Aspen was there again, standing guard. He looked me up and down, taking in the snug green dress that did amazing things for the few curves I had. Without a word, I walked past him. Before I could turn the handle on my door, he gently grazed the skin on my arm. It was slow but brief, and in those few seconds I felt that need, that sense of longing that Aspen tended to inspire in me. One look at his emerald eyes, hungry and deep, and I felt my knees start to go shaky. I moved into my room as quickly as I could, tortured by our connection. Thank goodness I barely had time to think about what Aspen made me feel, because the moment the door shut, my maids swarmed around me, preparing me for bed. As they chatted away and brushed my hair, I tried to let myself forget about everything for a moment. It was impossible. I had to choose. Aspen or Maxon? But how was I supposed to decide between two good possibilities? How could I make a choice that would leave some part of me devastated either way? I comforted myself with the thought that I still had time. I still had time.
Chapter 5. So, Lady Celeste, you're saying that the quantities aren't sufficient, and you feel the number of men taken in the next draft should be raised?
Gavril Fidei, the moderator of discussions on the Ilia Capital Report, and the only person who ever interviewed the royals, asked. Our debates on the report were tests, and we knew it. Even though Maxon didn't have a timeline, the public was aching for the field to narrow, and I sensed the king, queen, and their advisors were too. If we wanted to stay, we had to perform, whenever and wherever they said. I was glad I'd made it through that awful report about the soldiers. I remembered some of the statistics, so I stood a decent chance of making a good impression tonight. Exactly, Gavril. The war in New Asia has been going on for years. I think one or two rounds of inflated drafts would give us the numbers we need to end it. I really couldn't stand Celeste. She'd gotten one girl kicked out, ruined Chris's birthday party last month, and literally tried to rip a dress off my back. Her status as a two made her consider herself a cut above the rest of us. To be honest, I didn't have an opinion about the number of soldiers Ilia had, but now that I knew Celeste's, I was unwaveringly opposed. I disagree, I said in as ladylike a tone as I could manage. Celeste turned my way, her dark hair whipping over her shoulder in the process. With her back to the camera, she felt perfectly comfortable blatantly glaring at me.
Ah, Lady America, you think increasing the numbers is a bad idea?
Gavril asked. I felt the heat of a blush on my cheeks.
Twos can afford to pay their way out of the draft, so I'm sure Lady Celeste has never seen what it does when families lose their only sons. Taking more would be devastating, particularly for the lower castes, who tend to have larger families and need every member to work in order to survive.
Marley, beside me, gave me a friendly nudge. Celeste took over.
Well, then what should we do? Certainly you aren't suggesting that we sit back and let these wars drag on.
No, no. Of course I want Ilia to be done with the war. I paused to gather my thoughts and looked across at Maxon for some sort of support. Next to him, the king looked peeved. I needed to switch directions, so I blurted out the first thing that came to mind.
What if it was voluntary?
Voluntary?
Gavril asked. Celeste and Natalie chuckled, which made it worse. But then I thought about it. Was it such a terrible idea?
Yes. I'm sure there would need to be certain requirements, but Perhaps we'd get more out of an army of men who wanted to be soldiers, as opposed to boys who were only doing what it took to stay alive and get back to the life they left behind. A hush of consideration fell on the studio. Apparently, I'd made a point.
That's a good idea, Elise chimed in. Then we'd also be sending out new soldiers every month or two as people sign up. It might be invigorating to the men who've been serving a while.
I agree, Marley added, which was usually the extent of her comments. She clearly wasn't comfortable in debate situations.
Well, I know this might sound a little modern, but what if it was open to women? Chris commented.
Celeste laughed aloud. Who do you think would sign up? Would you be heading into the battlefield? Her voice dripped with an insulting disbelief. Chris kept her head together.
No, I'm not soldier material. But, she continued to Gavril, if there's one thing I've learned from being in the selection, it's that some girls have a frightening killer instinct. Don't let the ball gowns fool you, she finished with a smile.
Back in my room, I allowed my maids to stay a little later than usual to help me get the pile of pins out of my hair.
I liked your idea of the army being voluntary, Mary said, her nimble fingers hard at work.
Me too, Lucy added. I remember watching my neighbors struggle when their oldest sons were taken. It was almost unbearable when so many didn't come home.
I could see a dozen memories flash before her eyes. I had some of my own. Miriam Carrier was widowed young, but she and her son Aiden managed all right, just the two of them. When the soldiers had shown up at her door with a letter and a flag and their meaningless condolences, she'd caved in on herself. She couldn't make it on her own. Even if she had the ability, she didn't have the heart. Sometimes I saw her begging as an aide in the same square where I had said my goodbyes to Carolina. But it wasn't as if I had anything to give her. I know, I said to Lucy's reflection.
I thought Chris went a bit too far, Anne commented. Women in battle sounds like a terrible idea.
I smiled at her prim face as she focused intently on my hair.
According to my dad, women used to...
A short burst of knocks came at the door, startling all of us.
I had a thought,
Maxon announced, walking in without waiting for an answer. It appeared we had a standing date Friday nights after the report.
Your Majesty, they said together, Mary dropping pins as she sank into her curtsy.
Let me help you,
Maxon offered, coming to Mary's aid.
It's all right, she insisted, blushing fiercely and backing out of the room.
Far less subtly than I'm sure she intended, she made wide eyes at Lucy and Anne, begging them to leave with her.
Good night, miss, Lucy said,
tugging on the hem of Anne's uniform to get her to follow. Once they were gone, Maxon and I both broke down into laughter. I turned to the mirror and continued to work the pins out of my hair.
They're a funny lot, Maxon commented.
It's just that they admire you so much. Modestly, he waved the compliment away.
Sorry I interrupted, he said to my reflection.
It's fine, I answered, tugging out the last pin. I ran my fingers through my hair and draped it over my shoulder. Do I look okay? Maxon nodded, staring a little longer than was necessary. He came to his senses and spoke.
Anyway, this idea.
Do tell.
You remember that Halloween thing?
Yes, oh, I still haven't read the diary. It's well hidden, though, I promised.
It's fine, no one's looking for it. Anyway, I was thinking. All those books said it fell in October, right?
Yes.
It's October now. Why don't we have a Halloween party?
I spun around.
Really? Oh, Maxon, could we?
Would you like that?
I would love it.
I figured all the selected girls could have costumes made. The off-duty guards could be spared dance partners, since there's only one of me, and it would be unfair to make everyone stand around waiting for a turn. And we could do dancing lessons over the next week or two. You did say there wasn't much to do during the days sometimes. And candy. We'll have the best candies made and imported. You, my dear, will be stuffed by the end of the night. We'll have to roll you off the floor.
I was mesmerized.
And we'll make an announcement. Tell the entire country to celebrate. Let the children dress up and go door to door doing tricks like they used to. Your sister will love that, yes?
Of course she will. Everyone will. He deliberated a moment, pursing his lips.
How do you think she would like celebrating here at the palace?
I was stunned. What?
At some point in the competition, I'm supposed to meet the parents of the elite. Might as well have siblings come and do this around a festive time, as opposed to waiting.
His words were cut off by me barreling into his arms. I was so elated by the possibility of seeing May and my parents, I couldn't contain my enthusiasm. He wrapped his arms around my waist and stared into my eyes, his own glittering with delight. How did this person, someone I'd imagined would be my polar opposite, always seem to find the things that would make me the happiest? Do you mean it? Can they really come?
Of course, he answered. I've been longing to meet them, and it's part of the competition. Anyway, I think it would do all of you good to see your families.
Once I was sure I wouldn't cry, I whispered back, "Thank you."
You're quite welcome. I know you love them.
I do. He chuckled.
And it's clear you'd do practically anything for them. After all, you stayed in the selection for them.
I jerked back, putting space between us, so I could see his eyes. There was no judgment there, only shock at my abrupt movement. I couldn't let this pass, though. I had to be absolutely clear. Maxon, they were part of the reason I stayed in the beginning, but they're not why I'm here now. You know that, right? I'm here because...
Because?
I looked at Maxon, his adoring face so hopeful. Say it, America. Just tell him.
Because?
He asked again, this time with an impish smile coming to his lips, which made me soften even more. I thought about my conversation with Marley and the way I'd felt the other day when we talked about the selection. It was hard to think of Maxon as my boyfriend when there were other girls dating him, but he wasn't just my friend. That hopeful feeling hit me again, the wonder that we might be something special. Maxon was more to me than I'd let myself believe. I gave him a flirtatious smile and started walking toward the door.
America Singer, you get back here.
He ran in front of me, wrapping an arm around my waist as we stood, chest to chest. Tell me, he whispered. I pinched my lips together.
Fine, then I shall have to rely on other means of communication.
Without any warning, he kissed me. I felt myself dip backward a bit, completely supported by his arms. I placed my hands on his neck, wanting him to hold me, and something shifted in my head. Usually, when we were alone together, I could block out the other girls. But tonight, I thought about the possibility of someone else in my place. Just imagining it. Someone else in Maxon's arms, making him laugh, marrying him. It broke my heart. I couldn't help it. I started to cry.
Darling, what's wrong?
Darling, the words, so tender and personal, enveloped me. In that moment, any desire I had to fight my feelings for Maxon disappeared. I wanted to be his dear, his darling. I wanted to be Maxon's alone. It might mean welcoming a future I never thought I would, and saying goodbye to things I never intended to, but the thought of leaving him now wasn't something I could handle. It was true that I wasn't the best candidate for the crown, but I didn't deserve to be in the running at all if I couldn't at least be brave enough to confess how I felt. I sighed, trying to keep my voice steady. I don't want to leave all this.
If I remember correctly, the first time we met you said it was like a cage.
He smiled.
It does grow on you though, doesn't it?
I gave my head a small shake. Sometimes you can be so stupid. A weak laugh pushed through my choked-up throat. Maxon let me pull away just enough so I could look into his brown eyes. Not the palace, Maxon. I could care less about the clothes or my bed or
Believe it or not, the food. Maxon laughed. It was no secret how excited I had been about the extravagant meals here. It's you, I said. I don't want to leave you.
Me?
I nodded.
You want me?
I giggled at his bewildered expression. That's what I'm saying. He paused a moment.
How? But what did I do?
I don't know, I said with a shrug. I just think that we'd be a good... us. He smiled slowly.
We'd be a wonderful us.
Maxon pulled me in, roughly by his standards, and kissed me again.
Are you sure?
He asked, holding me at arm's length, staring intently at me.
Are you absolutely positive?
If you're sure, I'm sure. For a flicker of a second, something changed in his expression. But it passed so quickly I wondered if it, whatever it was even real. In the very next moment, he led me over to the bed, and we perched on the edge together, holding hands as my head rested on his shoulder. I was expecting him to say something. After all, wasn't this what he had been waiting for? But there were no words. Every once in a while, he'd let out a long sigh, and in that sound alone, I could hear how happy he was. That helped me not feel so anxious. After a while, perhaps because neither of us knew what to say, Maxon sat up straighter.
I should probably go. If we're going to add all the families to the celebration, I need to make extra plans.
I pulled back and smiled, still giddy that I was going to get to hug my mom, dad, and May soon. Thank you again. We stood together, walking toward the door. I held on to his hand tightly. For some reason, I dreaded letting it go. It felt like this whole moment was fragile somehow, and if it shifted too much, it might break.
I'll see you tomorrow,
he promised in a whisper, his nose millimeters away from mine. He looked upon me with such adoration that I felt silly for worrying.
You're astonishing.
Once he was gone, I closed my eyes and pulled in everything from our short time together. The way he stared at me, the playful smiles, the sweet kisses. I thought about them over and over as I got ready for bed, wondering if Maxon was doing the same thing. Chapter 6.
Lovely miss, keep pointing at the sketches, and the rest of you, try not to look at me, the photographer asked.
It was Saturday, and all of the elite had been excused from our obligatory day of sitting in the women's room. At breakfast, Maxon made his announcement about the Halloween party, and by the afternoon our maids had started working on costume designs, and photographers had shown up to document the whole process. Now, I was attempting to look natural as I went over Anne's drawings, while my maid stood behind the table with pieces of fabric, containers of sequins, and an absurd amount of feathers. The camera snapped and flashed as we tried to give several options. Just as I was about to pose with some gold fabric held up to my face, we had a visitor.
Good morning, ladies,
Maxon said, strolling through the open doorway. I couldn't help but stand a little straighter, and it felt like my smile was taking over my face. The photographer caught that moment before addressing Maxon.
Your Majesty, always an honor. Would you mind posing with the young lady?
It would be my pleasure.
The maids stepped back, and Maxon picked up a few sketches and stood right behind me, the papers in front of us in one hand, and his other settled low on my waist. That touch conveyed so much to me. See, it said, soon I'll get to touch you like this in front of the whole world. You don't have to worry about anything. A few pictures were taken, and the photographer left for the next girl on his list. I realized my maids had inconspicuously dismissed themselves at some point as well.
Your maids are quite talented,
Maxon said.
These are wonderful concepts.
I tried to act like I always did with Maxon, but things felt different now. Better and worse at the same time. I know, I couldn't be in better hands.
Have you settled on one yet?
He asked, fanning out the papers on my desk.
We're all fond of the bird idea. I think it's meant to be a reference to my necklace, I said, touching the thin string of silver. My songbird necklace was a gift from my dad, and I preferred it over the heavy jewelry the palace provided for us.
I hate to say this, but